Is it true that President Carter's thrown Israel under the bus and endorsed a terrorist group? Got you covered today right here on The Line of Fire.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Here we are. It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Welcome to the broadcast. Thanks so much for joining us. Michael Brown, here with you to take your calls, answer your questions relating to Israel, the Jewish people, and anything else you want to talk about that fits in those categories. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Last night, I wrote an article entitled, President Carter Aligns Himself with Terrorists. Now, for those of you who have followed the career of President Carter, this is not a surprise. He co-authored an article with former Irish President Mary Robinson in Foreign Policy magazine, and there has been a lot of uproar about it, a lot of criticism from many Jewish leaders and others, really saying that basically he is throwing Israel under the bus, faulting them primarily for the recent conflict and saying that Hamas needs to be recognized as a legitimate political actor in the scene and not regarded anymore as a terrorist group. Of course, President Carter, whose presidency is very poorly ranked in terms of recent history. In fact, in terms of recent presidents, for some years now, he was ranked as the worst of our presidents, and I'll tell you why that was especially painful to hear to me. But he was ranked as one of our worst for many years. Of course, President Reagan, when he ran against President Carter, coming in as former Governor Reagan, he completely wiped out Jimmy Carter in terms of the election. But recent polls have actually put President Obama as worse than President Carter. Of course, it takes many years to sort someone's legacy out. But on the one hand, President Carter has been known as someone who wants to be a peacemaker. He helped broker the Camp David Accords, and he was a Nobel Prize winner, a Nobel Prize Peace winner. At the same time, he has been known for his very strong stance against Israel. Some have even branded him an anti-Semite. He expressly has called Israel an apartheid state and said that in many ways it was worse than South Africa. So it's no surprise that he has taken the stand that he has, but it is outrageous nonetheless. So we'll talk about that. If you want to read my article, go to askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, and click on latest article. I've read some very interesting comments from some folks saying, listen, President Carter has saved more Jewish lives, Israeli lives, than anybody with the Camp David Accords, and here Israel isn't grateful. There's a reason that Israel isn't, quote, grateful. But I remember when President Carter was elected, I remember Nancy and I were newly married, and he was an open, born-again Christian, and here we'd both been saved in a few years, and I was so excited. Wow, boy, because, you know, a small world, and you think, born again, wow, special, born again, and he's a born-again Christian. And I remember thinking, this is amazing. He made his first a cabinet choice, and people said it's a good choice. And I'm like, yes, yes, because he's a born-again Christian. You know, I just kind of this over-exalted, naive idea of things. And, of course, his presidency ended up being a disaster in many, many ways, and that's why he was swept out so summarily by President Ronald Reagan. So with all respect towards the former president, boy, he is on the very wrong side here. If you agree with me or disagree, you want to weigh in on President Carter, Hamas, Israel, you can agree with me or differ, give me a call, 866-34-TRUTH.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yes, that is the sound of Israeli music, meaning it is thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Michael Brown, welcome to the broadcast. I'm starting off today focusing on the article that was written in Foreign Policy magazine, jointly written by President Carter, former President Carter, and former Irish President Mary Robinson. In the article, they say, quote, "There is no humane or legal justification for the way the Israeli Defense Forces are conducting this war." No humane or legal justification. Extraordinary. He calls on Israel and the West to recognize Hamas's, quote, "legitimacy as a political actor." And Mr. Carter claims that Hamas, by recently joining together with the Palestinian Authority in a unity government, pledged to adopt the three basic principles demanded by the Middle East Quartet, comprising the United Nations, the European Union, and Russia, namely nonviolence, recognition of Israel, and adherence to past agreements. But then he says, tragically, Israel rejected this opportunity for peace and has succeeded in preventing the new government's deployment in Gaza. With all respect to the fact that these are two former presidents, I have to say, and as I say in the article, these words are outlandish. Let's start here. Nonviolence and recognition of Israel. Where has Hamas officially ever repudiated violent resistance against Israel? And where has it ever officially recognized Israel's right to be in the land? They've recently had leaders saying, look, we're not against the Jews, just as Jews. It's just whoever the occupiers are, it doesn't matter if they're Muslims, we would fight them. Well, if they were Muslims, they wouldn't be considered occupiers because Palestine is considered to be Muslim territory. Where has Hamas ever renounced its stand against Israel? May 21st, senior Hamas official Salah Badarwil stated, quote, "Hamas's platform is known to everyone and is not unambiguous. Any referral to handling the Palestinian issue through peaceful means implies the cleansing of Palestine from foreigners who entered in 1948, before and after this time." Cleansing. Call that ethnic cleansing. All Jews must leave. And this is supposed to be a legitimate peace partner for Israel? 10 weeks ago, that was May 21st, when he said it's not unambiguous, I think he meant not ambiguous. When Hamas commemorated mockingly Israel's 66th birthday in May, they had a mock version of Israel's national anthem, HaTikvah, which means the hope, and the Arabic words of the song twisted the message. They changed it to the end of hope for Israel. They said Israel was doomed and that Jerusalem will be renamed and known by its Arabic name, Al-Quds, holy place. It also threatens to deport Israelis or worse, kill them. This was just in May. This is the legitimate political actor. Here. That same week, a Hamas publication threatened Israel's Jews with genocide via a political cartoon. Also, Hamas children's show encouraged children to shoot all the Jews. This is the legitimate political actor, and Israel tragically missed an opportunity to work with them. I mean, I'll get into this a lot more over the broadcast today. But what it seems mind-boggling to me, what is mind-boggling to me, is that President Carter, Irish President Mary Robinson, don't realize that this is a spiritual and ideological battle, and that's what colors politics for Hamas. And there is no room for the Jewish people in the land in radical Islam, period. And any agreement that's made is just made so that they can get stronger to fight more effectively. Here, July 25th, so 2 weeks ago, roughly, Hamas run Al-Aqsa TV. This is one of the Muslim leaders. He proclaimed, this is during one of the Friday mosque sermons, "We will not leave a single one of you," meaning Jews, "alive." And Israel missed an opportunity to not work with them as legitimate political actors? How about the preamble to the Hamas charter, which has never been officially renounced by Hamas? "Israel will exist and will continue to exist until Islam will obliterate it just as it obliterated others before." Notice it's Islam. This is a battle with radical Islam. How does President Carter not get that? 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to the phone, starting with Anil in College Park, Maryland. Thank you for calling the Line of Fire.
Dr. Brown, thank you, and shalom. The difficulty I'm having is to be so harsh on President Carter, bringing up his record as the worst president in public opinion, which can often be wrong. Remember, he was the one that started putting human rights on the table that eventually led to the collapse of the Soviet Union, liberated South Africa. President Reagan, who we worship today, called Mandela a terrorist. And while we could have disagreed with the anti-apartheid fighters, Christian compassion allows us to be sympathetic to the African women and children, which allowed the churches to play the role. I'm a little disappointed that you're not seeing the benefit of debate and discussion. As a Christian, I love Israel. The Muslims will do nothing for me. As you say, they will be like ISIS, basically. But while ISIS is there, we are negotiating with Maliki. We have Abbas in the West Bank. Arafat was a terrorist. We found problems with him. What's wrong with Abbas? We can still negotiate with Abbas. There's the example of Gandhi. The British called him a terrorist, and they negotiated with him, although there was extremists like Chandra Bose.
Let's have a discussion about this, and I very much appreciate the call and the tone of it. Of course, historians, as far as I know, absolutely do not credit President Carter with any movement towards the fall of the Soviet Union, but place that squarely on Ronald Reagan's shoulders. Those things could be debated. His presidency, I brought up simply to say there's already a very negative legacy. I did say that he seeks to be...
No, Dr. Brown, I disagree. You're trying to badmouth him because you disagree on this one point. That's clear to me, even as a Christian and a great supporter and admirer of yourself.
All right, but Anil, I'm telling you that wasn't... Anil... Excuse me, sir. I do want to have a discussion with you, all right?
Okay.
But that's not why I said it. I'm telling you that's not why I said it. So you just have to take me. I'm just giving. I said I was disappointed. I gave a little historical background, okay? I did mention he brokered the Camp David Accords. But you misjudged why I said that, so I'm just telling you why. But here's the bigger question. Would you put Hamas in the same category as Nelson Mandela and Mahatma Gandhi?
No, but what about the other side? You know, there are other partners. You know, I don't know so much about the politics you're talking about, but there's people we can negotiate with. We cannot be so against people we disagree with that we want them wiped out on both sides. There are extremists on both sides, and you know, leading up to this war, there's burnings and beatings that went on. So we're not innocent either side. So we need to show our Christian credentials, no matter how demanding the situation.
Okay. Let me just engage your point here. Number one, Israel's stated policy, was not wiping out the Palestinians, and Israel is continually trying to work with Mahmoud Abbas. Continually, when Mahmoud Abbas said, "I'm partnering with Hamas," that's when Israel said, okay, then we can't deal with you because Hamas is sworn to Israel's destruction. Think of this. When Israeli children die, Hamas celebrates. When Palestinian children die, Israel mourns.
They will be quick to kill me, too, because I disagree with them. But look at South Africa again, which is a model for so many people. Mandela was in bed with the communists. He had the Azapo people, and the PAC, the Pan-African Congress. Not everyone in South Africa was a Mandela, but he was unique in being able to bring all these people around.
Yeah, absolutely. But so that's the goal. In other words, that's what Israel is trying to do. We got a break. I'm sorry, sir. The issue is President Carter is saying Israel should embrace Hamas. That's the point. Israel should embrace Hamas as a legitimate political actor. That's what I'm rejecting. That's the point.
Give us strength to always do what's right.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us, friends, on this thoroughly Jewish Thursday. I wish I had more time to chat with our last caller. What I'm missing is, of course, Israel needs to deal with whoever they can, but Hamas is not one of those people. It would be like America saying, all right, after 9/11, we don't want to see any more deaths and casualties, so we're going to recognize al-Qaeda as a legitimate political actor and deal with them and work out some kind of an agreement. Or we're going to do that now with the Taliban. It's the same with Hamas. Here, this is the slogan of Hamas, which has never been renounced. Allah is its goal, the Prophet, meaning Muhammad, its model, the Quran, its constitution, jihad, its path, and death for the cause of Allah, its most sublime belief. Article 15 of the Hamas Charter, the day the enemies usurp part of Muslim land, jihad becomes the individual duty of every Muslim in the face of the Jews' usurpation. It is compulsory that the banner of jihad be raised. And on it goes. Article 7 of Hamas Charter. Hamas has been looking forward to implementing Allah's promise to annihilate the Jews, whatever time it might take. When did Hamas ever renounce this? That's the point. President Carter is saying that we should, in the West and Israel, should work with Hamas as a legitimate political player. That's ridiculous. Ridiculous. And leader after leader is upset with this. According to the Weekly Standard, Jimmy Carter pins the blame for the current conflict on Israel's refusal to appreciate a major confession, alleged major confession made by Hamas in April. Of course, there was no major confession or concession. John Kerry admitted, Secretary of State Kerry, no country can live with that condition. And the United States, meaning Hamas constantly attacking Israel, stands squarely behind Israel's right to defend itself in those circumstances, period. Secretary of State Kerry said Hamas behaved in an unbelievably shocking manner engaging in this activity. And yes, there has been horrible collateral damage as a result. By the way, there are Muslim nations, Arab leaders, who are not siding with Hamas, finding Hamas to be a bigger problem than Israel. What does that tell you? 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Washington, D.C. Glenn, thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. I just wanted to make three quick points that reveal such a big double standard with Carter and other people in what they require Israel to do. Number one, Egypt itself has maintained a very strong border and strong security in regards to the Palestinians, and yet they say it's illegitimate for Israel to do the very same thing. Number two, they say the Palestinians have the right to self-rule, but no one applies that same standard to Jordan and says that the Palestinians in Jordan have the right to self-rule. And number three, we've always thought it was legitimate to use an embargo or boycott against Cuba so that the government in Cuba would change. But no one thinks that Israel has the right to have a boycott to force Hamas to no longer have power and to see a regime change. Thank you.
Yes, thank you for the concise points. Well said. I appreciate it. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Reynaldo in Queens, New York. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yes, thank you so very much, you guys, for being a little watchman on the wall there. I want to bring the spiritual part of it, that we're wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and wickedness and high places. And this is ultimately what's going on. I mean, how many empires, how many peoples have gone after Israel, the children of God, the chosen people, and he has defended them and stands for them, and he will. Always and forever. As per the word of the Lord. Zechariah, Dr. Brown. Maybe we can talk a little bit about that. Thank you so very much.
Yes, I appreciate it, and thanks also for the kind words. Basically, Reynaldo was talking about, say, texts like in Zechariah 12 and 14 that do say that all nations will come against Jerusalem and that God will fight for Jerusalem and that there will be national repentance. There will be a turning of the Jewish people to the Messiah at that point. Does it mean when it says all nations? Does that mean all nations on the planet, in which case America would be one of those? Does it mean all nations in terms of a general summarial statement, so it's not necessarily every last nation, but generally the whole world turn against Israel? Or does it mean in the region? The most natural reading to me from this distance, in other words, not living in Zechariah's time, is it is speaking of all nations around the world. But is that for sure? No, there is debate about it. Is it possible that Zechariah 12 and Zechariah 14 should be interpreted spiritually, referring to past events or something? No, absolutely not. Doesn't work. I know there are people who've attempted to do that. Gary DeMar, who's certainly literate and scholar in these areas, has attempted to do that. I categorically differ with that preterist reading of those passages. And it's clear that what is written has not yet happened, and the Lord has not yet touched his feet back down on the Mount of Olives in Jerusalem, and everything else prophesied there has not yet happened, but it will. So ultimately, do I believe that God will fight for Israel? Yes. Do I believe that human sinfulness in Israel as well will be fully manifest? Yes. Do I believe that it is only through the children of Israel turning to the Messiah that lasting peace will come? Yes. Do I believe that there are promises to some of the Arab nations as well? Sure. Look at the end of Isaiah 19, when Egypt and Assyria, which would be modern-day Iraq, will be serving Yahweh, serving the Lord together with Israel. So Israel's called the third part, along with those two Muslim nations. They weren't Muslim nations back then, but they are now. How extraordinary. And it is extraordinary that there's a great harvest taking place in the Muslim world to this day, many Muslims coming to faith in miraculous, glorious, and wonderful ways. That being said, it is an urgent hour. It's another birth pang. Things may quiet down for a while, but it is a very intense and urgent time. And sadly, President Carter has done what he's done for many years, thrown Israel under the bus. Read my article for more. Go to AskDrBrown.org. Click on latest article. And if you do appreciate the work that we're doing, partner with us. It is not just Jewish outreach that we are seriously and heavily involved in, but also we are seriously and heavily involved in equipping the church to deal with issues having to do with Israel and the Jewish people. If you become a Torchbearer monthly supporter, we'll also send you as a free gift the new Tree of Life version of the Bible, hardcover translation, first ever of its kind by a team of Messianic Jewish scholars. So call now to partner with us, 1-800-278-9978. Really appreciate if you're able to stand with us on a regular basis. 1-800-278-9978 or go to AskDrBrown.org right on the home page and find out how we'll pour back into you every month as you partner with us. Together, friends, we're making a real difference.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Michael Brown, welcome to the Line of Fire. Thanks so much for joining us. 866-34-TRUTH. I've been taking issue with President Carter and former Irish President Mary Robinson and their joint article in Foreign Policy magazine, where, as I see it, they basically throw Israel under the bus and at the same time say that Hamas should be recognized as a legitimate political actor. The West and Israel should recognize Hamas's, quote, legitimacy as a political actor, and Israel is guilty. That's why there is war in the Middle East right now. Yes, they do say that Hamas's indiscriminate shooting of rockets is wrong. But let's remember, they've got to remind us of the statistics that far more Palestinians died than Israelis died, and therefore Israel's guilty. Of course, they have the Iron Dome. They're just not playing fair. I don't understand how someone with world leadership experience does not recognize the radical spiritual ideology that drives Hamas. If it was just a political issue, deep-seated political differences between Israel and Hamas, that would be one thing, but it's not. It is ideologically driven. And look, if you say to me, Mike Brown, do you renounce the Crusades? Yes, of course. Mike Brown, when some guy shoots an abortion doctor, wounds him or kills him, do you categorically, without qualification, denounce that? Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, why can't Hamas categorically and completely renounce its anti-Israel statements? Because they are fundamental to their ideology. That's why. When a terrorist bomb, be it a PLO bomb or a Hamas bomb, kills Israelis, men, women, children, there is rejoicing among the terrorists. When Israel found out that some of their own kidnapped and murdered and set on fire, apparently burned alive, a Palestinian youth, a 16-year-old, there was national outrage and shame over it. There's a fundamental difference. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Brockton, Massachusetts. Tom, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Good noon.
You're on the air, Tom.
Yes. My concern is, Dr. Brown, why hasn't the Palestinian people on a whole become more proactive against exposing Hamas, especially when they are firing from areas that are heavily populated with civilians? And secondly, there is a great imbalance as it relates to Israel and what is happening in the Middle East. You can always see the media parading the Palestinian victims, but there is no one even reporting half of what the Israelis are suffering. Are how deeply they have suffered.
Yeah, in fact, Tom, if you're going to be a reporter, a correspondent in Gaza, you're going to have to play by Hamas's rules or you don't get to play at all. And not minimizing the tragic loss of life there, especially with women and children, but in point of fact, some things are also staged to make Israel look bad or look even worse. That's been known. I mean, how did the photographer happen to be there at that precise moment? But Tom, as to why more Palestinians, especially in Gaza, don't speak out against Hamas, they'll be killed if they do. It's pretty simple. They'll be killed if they do. Thank you for the call, sir. Important points.
It's It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
To Thoroughly Jewish Thursday on The Line of Fire, Michael Brown, thank you for joining us. 866-34-TRUTH. Penelope Cruz and Javier Bardem, just both actors, were married, signed an open letter, along with dozens of other Spanish film stars, directors, musicians, and writers, including renowned director Pedro Almodovar, denouncing Israel's Operation Protective Edge in Gaza as, quote, genocide. Roger Waters of Pink Floyd, frontman for Pink Floyd. Let's see. Of course, he's spoken out against this. He featured in the past a giant pig-shaped balloon emblazoned with a Star of David in a 2013 concert. He's also compared Israelis to Nazis. Russell Brand, the video said Hamas's terrorists might use what we would perceive or term as acts of terror to defend themselves against Israel. Actor Danny Glover has supported the boycott divestment movement, the BDS movement. 2009, he signed onto a declaration condemning Israel as an apartheid regime. 2014, he said, we stand in solidarity with the people of Palestine and support their call for cultural and academic boycott of Israel. Yeah, tell you what, guys, tell you what, folks, Hollywood elite, live under Hamas for a little while, live under radical Islam for a little while, or just, hey, live under a more moderate regime like the Palestinian Authority and openly and outwardly speak against Islamic denunciations, openly, outwardly speak against corruption within the Palestinian Authority, ask where all the money goes, try that. Ask where all the money goes that is coming into Hamas and Palestinian Authority, and see how that goes. It's interesting that you have Hollywood elite and tremendous, strong Jewish presence in Hollywood that can often be ultra-liberal but does not represent the massive sentiments of Jews nationwide when it comes to Hamas and Israel, although Israelis and Jews are the first to criticize their own people and their own regime and government. And if you try doing that in other settings, you wouldn't last for long. I posted a graphic on Facebook a few days ago that I saw online, and it was a picture of Hollywood actors or actresses or stars who had spoken out against Israel. And the question was, if their own heads were on the line, let's say this was under ISIS or under Al-Qaeda or under Taliban or under Boko Haram or under Hezbollah or under any of these other murderous radical Islamists, I wonder how long their heads would be on their shoulders or how bold they would be to speak out. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Julie in Spencerville, Maryland. Thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Thank you so much for being available, Dr. Brown. I agree with you 100%. I think that Hamas is the biggest threat to the Israelites, and I think that they're doing the right thing protecting themselves from Hamas. They can never make a pact with the devil because Hamas wants to wipe them off the face of the earth. So I don't know how all these foolish celebrities that, you know, they're just so opposed to God, they don't see it, they have scales over their eyes, and they can't possibly see the truth. And I think until the Lord removes those scales, they're never going to see Israel as being a democratic state that wants to protect itself.
You know, the bigger thing I look at, well, first, the biggest is always spiritual with everything. So I agree that ultimately with all issues, the biggest issues are spiritual. But the other thing is, if you look at this in a micro way, not in a macro way, if you just focus on one little thing and then not on the larger thing, you could look at evil Israel. You know, for example, you could go to a hospital and see children in Gaza who've been terribly wounded or who are dying, and who wouldn't be moved by that? And then you realize, okay, Israel has all the firepower, and what are the people in Gaza to do? And you can look at it like that. But all you have to do is step back a little bit and look at the larger issues and look at the larger history. And here, through this conflict, There have been several times when Hamas was offered a ceasefire, Israel was offered a ceasefire, Israel said yes, Hamas said no. And then Hamas said yes and then killed Israelis as soon as the ceasefire started, Israeli soldiers. Mm-hmm. If you look at it in a larger context, when nations of the world tried to broker a way for Jews and Arabs to live side by side in Palestine in the 20s, the Jews said yes. The Arab leadership mm-hmm. said no. Same in 47. Mm-hmm. I had a guest, a Palestinian Christian guest, said, yeah, it was a bad deal. Why say yes? Well, why turn around and say we're going to annihilate you? We're going to wipe you off the earth. And then after the Six-Day War in 67, again, the Arab leaders say no negotiating with Israel, no recognition of Israel. So this is what Israel is faced with. And remember, the state of Israel is birthed out of the ashes of the Holocaust. And the Jewish nation said, never again. We are because when Jews tried to flee Europe into Palestine, they were not allowed to come in by the British leadership and the world leadership. So Israelis are not going to allow that to happen again. And if you take Israel out of the region, just in terms of strategically for America, then you have even larger, massive problems. Hey, Julie, thank you so much for the call. Much appreciated. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Bill in Phoenix. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yeah, thanks, Dr. Brown. When having studied ex-presidents and even, you know, who might become president, back in those days when Reagan and Carter were on the forefront, the eschatology of each person claiming to be born again or being a Christian comes into play, and you can understand, because everybody becomes somewhere thinking that they know a certain aspect of eschatology from their Bible reading. And Jimmy Carter was a firm believer in the return of Jesus Christ to establish a thousand-year millennial kingdom reign with returning civil rights to every peoples around the world, and especially beginning in the Middle East.
Now, how do you know that he thought this would bring in a thousand-year? How do you know that he thought this would bring in the millennial kingdom? I don't remember ever hearing those things articulated.
Well, he was connected and wrote and conducted lessons within the Southern Baptist in the South there, and was, as you recall, openly declaring himself to be a born-again Christian, which was the first time we really had that happen in a presidential candidacy and things like that. And it was all during
I understand, but I'd be curious to know if you could cite for me where he felt that what he was doing, he definitely fought for human rights in certain ways. I believe in many ways he was misguided. I do believe that he has sought to be a peacemaker, but he's been misguided. But, Bill, tell you what, do me a favor, sir. See if you can find any specific references. They may exist. And let me just say why I'm not completely dismissive of the idea. Jonathan Edwards, when he called for united corporate prayer of Christians worldwide in terms of scriptural promises for revival and prophecies of the end times, Jonathan Edwards actually believed that through prayer and revival that the kingdom of God could be established on the earth. So did President Carter have any idea that through the influence of the gospel that the kingdom of God could be fully established on the earth? I'm not familiar with that, but if there's something explicit to that effect, by all means, let me know. Thank you for the call. 866-34-TRUTH. Prime Minister Netanyahu asks, will civilized world tolerate terrorists using human shields? Hamas combat manual was recovered, and it says in very, very clear and definite terms what we have already known and heard, that using human shields and then exploiting civilian deaths is part of the Hamas strategy. Now, I've seen people on social media saying, oh, yeah, Israel just happened to discover this. In other words, that this is a forgery. Let someone prove it's a forgery. IDF is showing actual pictures of the manual on, quote, urban warfare. And big question that's being asked where, this is by Rabbis Marvin Heer and Abraham Cooper of the Simon Wiesenthal Center. Where is the UN Human Rights Council? Where is Amnesty International? Where is Human Rights Watch? Where is the international media and Middle East pundits? Where are all the lawfare experts? Here is Exhibit A to indict Hamas for war crimes and crimes against humanity by placing the people of Gaza as human shields by design. We've linked to that on our Facebook page as well on Ask Dr. Brown, ASKDR Brown, Facebook. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast, 866-34-TRUTH. We have focused today on President Carter and former Irish President Mary Robinson and how they have addressed issues with Israel and Hamas. I want to summarize some things for you here. This is my fundamental issue with former Presidents Carter and Robinson in terms of their call for the recognition of Hamas as a legitimate political actor and, from my perspective, throwing Israel under the bus. They claim that back in April, when Hamas reconciled on some level with the Palestinian Authority and said, let's have a unity government, which would mean a unity government in Gaza as well. Let's have a unity government, that Israel missed the opportunity to see what Hamas was doing, because by doing that, they were therefore embracing implicitly, they were embracing nonviolence and the recognition of Israel and adherence to all past agreements. But that is completely bogus. And the reason Israel was so upset and said we will now break off talks with the Palestinian Authority was because this was a massive step backward, not forward. Hamas never renounced its call for violence against Israel, ever. No official statement renouncing it. Hamas never said we will recognize a Jewish state or we will recognize Israel. Even in the 1967 borders, we will officially recognize it. Why? Because they are radical Muslims, because of their radical Islamic ideology. And their radical Islamic ideology very simply cannot recognize the legitimacy of the Jewish people to be in the land of Palestine. They do not want a single Jew there. If it means killing them, if that means driving them out, they want them out, period. They have never renounced that. Let me reiterate, it was May 21st. So this is after Hamas's alleged concessions, that senior Hamas official Salah Badarwil stated that, quote, Hamas's platform is known to everyone and is not ambiguous. Any referral to handling the Palestinian issue through peaceful means implies the cleansing. Note that word cleansing. The cleansing of Palestine from foreigners who entered in 1948 before and after this time. And the 66th anniversary of Israel. May of this year, May of 2014, Hamas put out a mock video using the music and anthem of Israel, Hatikva, the national anthem, the hope, and turned it around and said there is no hope for Israel. And about the same time, children's programs on Al-Aqsa TV, the Hamas-run TV in Gaza, featured a little child talking about wanting to get older and shoot all the Jews. Come on, let's be realistic with what we're dealing with here. If you really care about the Palestinians, you've got to free them from Hamas. What about all the multiple hundreds of millions of dollars that have come into Hamas, not to mention Palestinian Authority? Where is the money gone? It's gone in Gaza to build terror tunnels. It's gone in Gaza to manufacture bombs that could have been used for hospitals, for schools, for all types of humanitarian help and aid. Where is it gone? Some of it, so much that's gone into Palestinian Authority has gone into people's pockets. Where is all this money being invested? It is not being invested in the good of the people. The best thing that could happen to the Palestinians, even if they voted for Hamas, is to free them from Hamas and have government established that will really care for them. Israel would like nothing more than to have the Palestinians content and happy and looking at the Israelis as friendly neighbors. They would love to see them have a thriving economy. In fact, if you look at Gaza when it was under Egypt, Gaza was not improved by Egypt before the Six-Day War in 1967. If you look at the refugee camps in other parts of the Arab world, why are they there? Because this is just meant to be an ongoing sore spot against Israel. Of course, Israel would like to see their quality of living improved if you just stopped trying to kill the Jews. And let's remember, when you read the Hamas Charter, which has never been renounced, people say, well, you can't think about that. Hey, it was put out, and it has never been renounced, and Hamas has acted on it since. Remember, it is an Islamic charter. It is political based on Islam, as some Muslims have said, that life is part of religion in Islam. That's how all-encompassing this is. So let's just remember this, okay? From the Hamas Charter, the preamble, Israel will exist and will continue to exist until Islam will obliterate it, just as it obliterated others before it. Article 15, the day the enemies usurp part of Muslim land, jihad becomes the individual duty of every Muslim. In the face of the Jews' usurpation, it is compulsory that the banner of jihad be raised. Article 33, ranks will close, fighters joining other fighters, and masses everywhere in the Islamic world will come forward in response to the call of duty, loudly proclaiming, "Hail to jihad." This cry will reach the heavens and will go on being resounded until liberation is achieved, the invaders vanquished, and Allah's victory comes about. And this is the slogan of Hamas, in keeping with the slogan of radical Islam worldwide. Allah is its goal, the Prophet Muhammad its model, the Quran its constitution, jihad its path, and death for the cause of Allah its most sublime belief. How can Mr. and Ms. Carter and Robinson, how can they not recognize that you're dealing with radical Islamists here? If they want to work for peace, if they don't want to see more casualties for the Palestinians or Israel, and we mourn over them, if they want to see peace and freedom, then they must bypass Hamas and work to help establish a legitimate government and call the Palestinian Authority to account as well. And then perhaps there can be the possibility of peace. All right, friends, so much more to talk about. Please read my article. I link it to several other articles as well. You can read it by going to AskDrBrown.org and clicking on latest article. And a whole lot of things I didn't even get to about this very story because there's so much, but my article will cover a lot of it for you. Sorry if I'm unable to get to everyone that wanted to speak with me as well. Remember to stay in touch with us via social media. I've got a graphic that was sent to me earlier today that's going to go up momentarily about the fine line between anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism and how anti-Zionism often cloaks as a mask for anti-Semitism. You know, one picture is worth 1,000 words. This one picture will do it. So go there to my website, AskDrBrown.org, and just click on the Facebook icon to join us via Facebook. To get our YouTube videos, click on the YouTube icon. And to get our emails, we'll be sending out an e-blast tomorrow morning with lots of important information and links. Just click on the email icon and fill out the info there, and it will be our joy to be in touch with you. My bottom line today, with respect to former Presidents Carter and Robinson, if you want to see lasting peace, don't look as Hamas as a friend, but rather as someone that needs to be bypassed for the good of the Palestinians. Is it true that President Carter's thrown Israel under the bus and endorsed a terrorist group? Got you covered today right here on The Line of Fire.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Oh, so much to talk about in the Middle East. I've spent an hour dealing with President Carter, along with former Irish President Mary Robinson, their article in Foreign Policy magazine, which, in my view, does throw Israel under the bus, faults them for the current conflict, and says that Hamas should be recognized as a legitimate political actor. More to say on that in a little while. I also have a special guest, a Jewish believer in Jesus. We're going to talk through his own testimony on this thoroughly Jewish Thursday. And your Jewish-related questions, 866-348-7884. If you haven't read my article, if you've missed it, it came out earlier today. It'll be running on other sites over the next day or so. It is entitled President Carter Aligns Himself with Terrorists. You can read it by going to AskDrBrown.org and clicking on latest article there. All right. A special announcement. It's just 5 weeks away, the weekend of September 12th, 13th, 14th. If you are anywhere in the greater Kansas City area, join me. We're going to have a fabulous weekend forum. I'm going to be tackling on a Friday night. I'm going to be speaking about, can you be gay and Christian? We're going to have a Q&A time to follow. I've got special presentations Saturday morning. We're going to talk about the issue of Zionism and Christianity. Are they compatible? And cessationism versus charismania. We'll have an afternoon panel debate. And then in the evening, speaking about hyper grace, and then two powerful Sunday morning services. So, and admission is free. If you're anywhere in the greater Kansas City area, please join us September 12th, 13th, 14th. It's going to be an amazing time together. Also, if you're anywhere in the Tulsa, Oklahoma area, anywhere in Tulsa, Oklahoma, I'm doing two major meetings addressing the issue of hyper grace. That's next week. You say, well, how can I follow all these dates or keep track of them? Easy. Just go to my website. When you go there, AskDrBrown.org, go to my website, and you can just click to find the itinerary there. In fact, we just changed it recently, so let me just tell you, I'm looking at it right now. Real easy. You just go to Press Room, it says About Dr. Brown, and go over to Itinerary, and there you'll have all the info that you need. All right, hot off the press. From PAL Watch, this is Palestinian Media Watch, palwatch.org. Fatah, so this is the alleged moderate partner. Fatah, like Hamas, continues to present all of Israel's land as occupied and maintains the destruction of Israel as its ultimate goal. In a recent example of this, Fatah's Central Committee member, Tawfiq Tarari, posted the following message on his personal Facebook page 2 days ago. Oh, our free people. To resolve and sacrifice in Gaza, you are more honored than us all. We remain committed to the promise, freedom, independence, and driving out the occupier from the entire Pure Land, from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea. Long live free Gaza. Your brother, Tawfiq Tarari. This is Facebook page of the Fatah Central Committee member, Tawfiq Tarari, and he's calling for the driving out of the occupier, that means the Jews, from the entire Pure Land. No Jews. Jews out. Yeah. And on and on it goes. If you don't go to PAL Watch, do it. Trust me on this one, all right? I don't make any money by sending you there or get any gain by sending you there. It's for the sake of truth. Go to palwatch.org and your eyes will be open super wide. We'll be right back.
Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, later in the broadcast, we're going to come back to the question of Israel, Hamas, and President Carter saying that Hamas should be recognized as a legitimate political actor. Again, you can read my article, which is really a scathing difference with former American President Jimmy Carter and former Irish President Mary Robinson. You can read it by going to AskDrBrown.org and clicking on latest article. But we are going to take a break from that on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. And I've got a thoroughly Jewish guest in the studio with me, Dean Stein. He's written the book Freedom from Financial Funk, but we want to focus in particular. Oh, it's a nice looking book as I'm flipping through the pages here. want to focus on Dean's own testimony. It's always neat to hear how people have come to the Lord. So, Dean, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Dean, how old were you when you came to faith in Jesus?
I was 19 years old.
19 years old. And where did you grow up?
Well, I was born in Manhattan, and I grew up in Staten Island. Actually attended the Jewish Foundation School on Staten Island from kindergarten through fourth grade. And then when I was 12 years old, my family moved upstate New York, and that's where I spent the rest of my time in upstate New York. When I got out of high school, I moved to Louisiana, and that's where I met Messiah.
Louisiana.
Yeah. Yeah.
I met a woman one time. She and her husband, I think, were in ministry. I met her in Pensacola years ago. And she was weeping and weeping when she saw me. And she said, I love the Jews, but you're the first Jew I've ever met. So I guess there was not like a thriving, large Jewish population in Louisiana. I was born in Manhattan, raised on Long Island. But when you mentioned going to a Jewish foundation school from kindergarten to fourth grade, how religious was that?
Well, let me just say this. My father was born and raised in Romania. And his mother had the insight, as Hitler was coming to power, to smuggle them out of Romania through the Holland Underground. So
really?
He escaped the Holocaust that
now,
way.
Now, how early was that?
This was in the 30s. This was in the early 30s, before 1940, when he came through on it in Ellis Island. And then when he moved here, a few years later, he moved to Israel. So, and I guess this was, to be honest with you, my father passed away when I was 5 years old. So I don't really know dates and times.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it was after 1948 or prior. I'm assuming it was after 1948, but prior to 1967. And he lived there 3 years, and then he came back to the States, and that's where he met my mother, and then I was born. My father was an atheist. He did not believe in a God at all.
Now, did you have any idea about his parents? We've had a hard time tracing things back in my own family, which came over from Russia, just really beyond grandparents. But there's a picture that we have of someone that looked just like my father, except he was an Orthodox Jew. So it's either my father's grandfather or great-grandfather, because his father, so my grandfather, whom I never knew, on my father's side, I never knew either grandfather on either side, but he was secular. When he came over to the States, he was secular. My father and his brothers were not bar mitzvahed, and my father always felt there was a certain lack and, you know, was trying to be a little more religious to make up for that. So
right.
Do you know anything about your father's father? Or
I know nothing. I know that my father was around 6 years old when his father died. And we've tried to find things, and we just can't. I mean, the furthest thing back I could find is when they were all living in one little apartment in New York City, and my Uncle Shim Shim was a horseradish salesman, and my Aunt Rose and Aunt Clara were seamstresses, you know,
that's
typical.
It. Yeah.
But that's it. But while my grandmother, I do know she was extremely religious. I remember my mother telling me that on the Sabbath she wouldn't even carry her handkerchief. She would pin it to her apron so she wouldn't be considered holy.
And yet
it.
Her son was an atheist.
He was an atheist, but he put us in the Jewish Foundation School. So there had to be something with him, his disdain. You know, I remember one story was when he was in Israel, he saw a boy riding a bicycle on the Sabbath, and he saw a rabbi grab him and throw him to the ground. And his statement was, so God would rather that you throw someone to the ground rather than you ride a bike on his holy day. It was that type of seeing true religion, not relationship, that was such a turnoff for him. But yet there was something in him that put us in the Jewish schools.
Obviously, this is just speculation, but could it have been in the aftermath of the Holocaust and the recognition that there was an all-out war against Jews being Jews?
Exactly. There were 550,000 Jews killed in Romania. So
really?
Very, very well.
Wow. All right. So growing up in that environment, how Jewish did you feel? What? How did you feel different? There was always them and us.
Right.
I remember as a kid, we were chatting one day with some other Jewish kids before we were bar mitzvahed, so, you know, could have been 11, 12 years old. And we were just talking and mentioned Protestant, Catholic, Christian, Gentile, and we said it was all the same, mm-hmm. all synonyms. So what was your perspective?
Well, I thought of it that way. I thought Catholic. When I heard a person who was a Christian, I thought of a Catholic. You know, they all worship Mary and different things like that. That was my perspective. The Mullally twins were two of my best friends. They were Roman Catholic, and I remember one time them telling me that I killed Jesus. And so I ran in the house, and I said, "Mom, they're saying we killed Jesus. Did we kill Jesus?" And my mother says, "You tell them that they are Roman Catholics, and the Romans nailed him to the cross. Tell them they killed Jesus." So that was, but I was proud, even as a little kid, I was proud to be Jewish. I did not grow up in a Jewish neighborhood, and so there was a lot of friction. But like I remember joining a tree fort once during Passover, so when everyone brought their sandwiches, mine was on matzah. And, you know, So I knew I was different, but not to the point where I felt like I was persecuted for being Jewish.
Did you know that Jesus was Jewish?
No. No, I just knew we hated Jesus and that he was a bad name and that as a result of him and his followers, the Holocaust.
Right. So that was your understanding. So even as someone who was not raised in an ultra-religious community, that was still the perspective. And look, Romania, right? From the Jewish perspective, that's a Christian nation, mm-hmm. right? Germany, Christian nation, exactly. You know, Lutherans. Austria, kind of equally divided between Catholics and Protestants, Christian nation.
Mm-hmm.
So how would people know that this is not Christianity, especially when this is not the first time that Jews have been persecuted by so-called Christians? Were you bar mitzvahed at 13?
No, we were extremely poor. So, and it was when I was 12 that we moved upstate New York and away from family and so forth. So I was not either.
All right. So, not bar mitzvahed, but still have this certain Jewish heritage. Did you have any spiritual thoughts as a teenager? Were you questioning, seeking?
Well, when I was 14 years old, and I became a drug addict at 14 years old, and I went 100% with it. I'm not one of those that say I was at the bottom when I came to the Lord. I was doing drugs, and I loved it. I mean, honestly, that's my testimony.
I understand. I relate, unfortunately.
But when I was 14 years old, I had a dream. And in this dream, I was on top of a tall tower, and these people were going to throw me off. And I was looking down on clouds, and I was screaming for help. And this was my first encounter ever. And Jesus just walked up to me on the air, and he said, "Dean, unless you believe in me, I can't help you."
All right, hang on. The Jesus that you hated as a Jew, the Jesus whose followers were responsible for the Holocaust, in a dream, you see him, you know it's Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And he's there to help you.
Right.
What in the world were you thinking?
Well, I didn't want his help. I looked at him and I said, "I'll never believe in you." And he put his hands behind his back. He said, "Then my hands are tied." And they threw me. And as I was falling through the clouds, I screamed, "Jesus, I believe in you." And immediately I was back on that platform. The men who were throwing me off were gone. He was standing there, and I put my finger right in his face. And I said, "I'll never believe in you, you jerk." And that was the end of the dream.
14 years old.
14 years old. And I woke up the next morning and continued until I got saved with a very real fear of death. I was very, very fearful of dying.
Well, did you think that this Jesus person could be real and you offended him? I mean, what was it?
I don't know, or maybe I don't remember. I just know that my disdain for him was so real. And that after that time, I would stay up at night and fall asleep watching TV just so that I didn't have to go to bed, because that was very real. And that's when I got into doing drugs, was right after that.
So was that a result of the fear, you think?
I would say probably, but there were people in my school that I did not get along with who invited me to go out and smoke a joint, and I thought, oh, this would be a way to become friends with them.
Yeah.
So that's really what enticed me, and then from there it just spiraled out of control very quickly.
So just real quick, we've only got 45 seconds before the break. I started smoking pot at 14. By the time I was 15, I was shooting heroin.
Okay.
It doesn't go like that for everyone. But how do you feel when marijuana, very potent now compared to what we knew, is being legalized in different states?
I am totally against it because I know the deception of that drug. And it's funny because when I decided I wanted to quit for the Messiah, I could stop doing everything, but I could not stop smoking pot. And then once I got high, it was like, well, I might as well snort this or, take this and drop this. But it was the pot that I could not. You can function with it, you can live with it, and it's so deceptive. I'm totally against it.
Yeah, same here. Definitely gateway drug, and definitely, especially now, so much more potent, dangerous. All right, we've heard some of the dissent. Now we're going to hear about salvation when we come back with Dean Stein. And I'm holding in my hands his book, Freedom from Financial Funk. It's good title, good alliteration there. Nice cover too. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast. There's a lot going on continually in Israel, the Middle East, more to talk about. We'll get to that later in the broadcast, but I am joined now by a special guest, lives here in Charlotte, North Carolina, with his wife, Jennifer. They've been married, is it 33 years now?
33 years now.
33
yeah.
years, 5 kids, 9, no, 10, sorry, 10 grandkids. Wow. We got 4 grand. All right, how old's your oldest grandchild?
Oldest one is 14.
14.
And the youngest one is about 3, maybe a month in the belly.
Wow, you got us. All right, our oldest is 13, youngest is 7. We got 4 grandkids. All right, good work. 32 years. 33. Okay. Dean Stein's book, Freedom from Financial Funk. Hey, before we get back to your testimony, who'd you write this book for?
Well, I basically wrote it because the Lord has taken me on several roller coaster rides financially, of bringing me to a place of doing more than I ever thought that I could and then crashing worse than I ever thought that I would. And so many principles He has taught me along the way, more from my failures than my successes. So I really felt like the Lord spoke to me about putting this into a story, not like financial books are always teachings. And this is more of a story of my life, beginning with my first business at 8 years old. That's part one. Part two of the book goes into more specific teachers. But I really wrote it for a young person wanting to start a business, or a wife that's trying to balance a budget, or somebody who's already seasoned in business that wants to grow their business.
Got it. How does someone get the book?
The website is www.freedomfromfinancialfunk.com. You can go on there. We have a special offer on the website today for the radio show. You can buy the book for $10.99. And then if you want Kindle or Nook, there's links into Amazon and Barnes & Noble to get them that way.
All right. Super. Glad to hear it. Okay. So you're a heavy drug user starting at the age of 14, you move down to Louisiana. And how is it that God reaches out to you and Jesus becomes friend and not foe?
It's real interesting. When I moved down there, a friend of mine had just robbed a pharmacy, stole 2,000 hits of speed, and we were on our way down there to deal drugs. We got down there, and really life was good. I got a job making $10 an hour, and this is back in 1979, 1980. So it was good money. We were selling the speed and doing very, very well doing that. I was driving a
You didn't feel bad about it. You were...
No. I mean, it had been my life for 6 years by this time.
Mm-hmm.
So everything was good. And when I was there, I saw a girl in a Pizza Hut, and I asked her out. And she said, well, you need to know I'm a Christian. And I said, oh, what a great coincidence. I am too. And so we went out on a date, and not even thinking about it, I actually lit up a joint as we were walking through a Walmart or a Kmart parking lot. And then she realized I wasn't a Christian. And about 3 weeks later, she came to where I was working, which was in a laydown yard of a construction site. And she brought me, and this is so key, the Children's Living Bible. I had not read. My high school diploma was because they called my mother in school and said, he won't graduate. He doesn't have enough days. He doesn't have enough credits. And my mother said, he's so much trouble. Why don't you just give him a diploma and get rid of him? And they did. So I really had no education.
Mother.
Yeah. Wow. And so as a result, I never read any books. I didn't have a good reading aptitude. And I get the Children's Living Bible. And my thought is at the time, well, if Jesus was a Jew, he couldn't be all that bad. I'll read about him.
When did you come to the understanding that he was Jewish?
I don't know. You know, when you asked me that question, that's the first thing I thought of is when did I realize he was? Because at that earlier, I didn't. But,
right.
but I yeah, did it's, at this
yeah,
point.
You hear it at a certain point, mm-hmm. and it's like, oh, I didn't know that. So
yeah. So I'm reading, and I'm thinking, geez, he knows these things he's supposed to do, and he does them, and these fools believe in him. But when it got to not breaking his bones. They broke the bones of the thief on the left and the right, and they didn't break his bones. And I don't even know then that I had the knowledge to understand why I was even saying this, but I remember standing up and I cried. And I had not cried since I was 5 years old that I can remember. And I was crying and I was yelling at the Bible and I was saying, break his bones, prove he's not the Messiah, crying. I mean, the Holy Spirit all over me, although I had no idea who that was.
Wow.
And so then I came to the head knowledge that Jesus was our Messiah. So I'm going around. Now, remember, I'm living with all these drug addicts, all these drug dealers, and I'm witnessing. I'm saying, listen, you need to get right with God like I am so you can go to heaven. And one of the guys said to me one day, he says, well, Dean, you're getting stoned and you're getting drunk and wasted and you're going to heaven, I'm going to hell. And I thought, wow, you're right, Rick. I'm going to quit these drugs for God. And it was the first time since I had started taking drugs that I ever wanted to quit. And I woke up the next morning and I announced to all my friends I quit, and by noon I was stoned. So I woke up the next morning and I announced today I quit, and by noon I was stoned. And like I said before, once I got stoned, well, then I might as well get drunk, I might as well drop acid, I might as well snort some coke. But it was every day for 4 straight months. So
the 4 months.
4 months, every day. So the culmination came when I took this same Christian girl out one day, and I took her out, and this was Southern Baptist, and they didn't drink wine either, and I was at a restaurant. I ordered a bottle of wine for us, and she didn't want it, and I got upset because I'd spent money on a bottle of wine she didn't want, and I drank the whole bottle at dinner. So on my way home, I come out of the car, I walk into the house, I say, I'm never going out with those beaten Christians again, and I just proceeded to get absolutely wasted. So at 3 a.m, I remember, April 9th, 1980, I crawled on my hands and knees to bed, and this was so key. I laid there totally wasted, and I said, Jesus, I can't do this. I don't care what you do with my life. You can even make me a preacher. And in my mind, the very worst thing he could ever even attempt to do in my life was make me a preacher. The second I said that, Dr. Brown, I was straight. I went from being completely wasted to absolutely straight that second. And it was like an elephant had just come off my chest. So I wake up the next morning. I walk out. We were living in Louisiana by Lake Charles, right on the Gulf of Mexico. A whole shipment of Colombian gold had come in. A whole pound was just sitting on our coffee table.
That's marijuana for those who don't know, Colombian gold.
My best friend hands me a joint, and I said, I quit. And he laughs, and he says, Dean, I know you quit. You'll quit tomorrow. And I said, you know something, Tony? I've been trying to quit for the Lord for 4 months. I gave him my life last night. I don't want this. I don't have a desire for this.
And you've been free.
And totally free. And everything. My filthy language changed. My desires changed. Everything about my life instantly.
Listen, friends, you might be listening and saying, well, that sounds like me. Well, why not do the same thing that Dean Stein did and cry out to God and say, God, I can't do it on my own. I need your help, but I unconditionally give you my entire life. Friends, you have absolutely no idea what will happen if you do that. Dean, we've heard the testimony part of salvation. I'm sure there's more to the story because there's the life since then. But right now, let me just encourage folks to go to the website Freedom From Financial Funk. And .com, correct?
.com.
All right. And get his book. You got any financial issues, any things you're trying to work through, plan ahead, learn from his mistakes, learn from his success. Freedom From Financial Funk by Dean Stein. Well, we have a lot in common. December 17th, 1971 was my radical turning point. All right, we'll be back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the broadcast on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, 866-34-TRUTH. I've just been speaking with Dean Stein. We are both in the Charlotte, North Carolina area these days. And I wanted to hear some of his testimony and share it with you. We're switching over, though, to discuss Middle East politics and give you the perspective that we have as Jewish believers in Jesus. And Dean's book is Freedom from Financial Funk. Hey, Dean, before, and if you've got a question, again, I've taken very strong issue with President Carter and his call for Israel and the West to deal with Hamas as a legitimate political actor in the Middle East, as opposed to trying to remove them from power for the good of the Palestinians. But if you've got a question, Jewish-related question, Israel-related question, or want to agree with me or take issue with me regarding President Carter, 866-348-7884. Dean, real quick, before we switch gears, was your mom alive when you came to faith?
Yes, she was. As a matter of fact, I was able to lead her to the Lord only because of how drastic a life when I left and when I returned. And my testimony, my life, spoke to her, and she received Messiah.
Wonderful. That is so awesome to hear. And one other thing, your book says how to survive and even thrive in today's economy. So you made some mistakes. You suffered some financial losses over the years. How are you doing these days?
This has been a real tough year. but other than that, every time I've had a crash, the Lord has brought me to a higher financial plateau, whether it would be just in business, in ideas, in creativity, or in actual businesses. So I've been able to, without exploiting those who've been hurt in the 2008 crash, I've been able to take those and help others, but at the same time, increase my assets. So it's been a blessing.
Good, good. Well, I mean, if you write a book on how to do it, you want to make sure you're doing it, right?
Exactly.
Okay. We haven't rehearsed this. I don't know what you're going to say. We've never discussed these issues together before. Do you hate Palestinians?
No. I hate the Palestinian cause.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I don't believe that the situation that's going on in Israel has anything to do with land at all. I believe the situation that has to do with the fact that they do not want Jews in the land. Just like, I don't even know if you mentioned this because I wasn't listening to the program earlier, but the name Palestinian, the people group, never called themselves Palestinian.
Yes, of course.
Until 1967. In our lifetime, they were not a people. They never wanted Jerusalem until 1967. When it was Jordan's, they never asked for it. And so the battle that's going on in the Middle East is not a battle for land. It's a battle for the elimination of the Jewish race. When Carter, you brought him up, when he wrote Peace Not Apartheid, he needed to be writing Peace Not Apartheid to the Palestinians, because that's what they want, is the elimination of the Jewish race in the land.
So when you hear, say, a moderate leader or someone with the Palestinian Authority saying that we recognize Israel's right to exist and want to be peace partners, do you think that's just rhetoric?
There may be a faction or a person or two. I believe as a whole, it is absolute rhetoric.
And okay, what about the Palestinian people by and large? They are raised in a difficult situation. They are raised with refugee status. They are raised under what feels to them like an occupation. They are raised in what seems to be injustice and inequality compared to Israel. And then I'll expand on the question then after the break, because we've got one coming up here. I'm going to give you a 9-minute question with 3 seconds to answer. They are raised, though, with an Islamic ideology that is hostile, not just to Israel, but to Jews in general. So how do you undo things that are so deep-seated? And remember, when they're taught in school, they're not taught about their Israeli neighbors. They're taught about that's our land, and we need to get back to our land. So how do we help this larger issue? If we care about the Palestinians, how do we address it? I'm talking with Dean Stein, his book, Freedom from Financial Funk. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yes, yes, that music means Thoroughly Jewish Thursday is here. 866-34-TRUTH. I'm sitting with my guest, Dean Stein, a fellow Jewish believer, fellow former drug user, powerfully delivered by the power of God. He's written a book called Freedom from Financial Funk. If you find yourself in financial funk and want freedom from it, this is a great book to read. You can go to his website, freedomfromfinancialfunk.com, to find out about it. He's got a special offer. Now, a special Jewish offer. Is that like a real discount?
That's right. It's real. $10.99 for the book instead of the normal $12.99.
All right. Think of what you could do with that $2
That's right.
That you save. I want to play a couple of clips for you, Dean, and then you can respond to a question that I asked. And we're just sitting here as Jewish believers. We are just we're comparing our thoughts and notes. Dean is not claiming to be a political expert. I'm not claiming to have spent 50 years living in the Middle East, but these are things we've reflected on much, read about much, talked about much. We have friends, family members, different ones living in Israel over the years, and many working with Palestinians as well. But I want to play a couple of clips. Johnny, we'll start with number four. This is from a very intense video, and it talks about UN agency that's working with the Palestinians. And during the summer camps where kids are going and they're playing on trampolines and having fun and having special time, what they actually teach these kids, it's going to be clip number 20. All right, clip number 20.
This summer, we visited UNRWA summer camps and met with campers, counselors, teachers, and camp directors. We found kids playing games and having fun. The campers shared what they've been learning this summer, while teachers and counselors described what they've been teaching. Since World War II, more than 50 million people have become refugees as the result of a war. UNRWA is the only refugee agency in the world that actively encourages refugees to act upon the right of return.
Now, UNRWA, of course, is United Nations Works and Reliefs Agency. And we'll put a link up later to this video, friends, so that you can find out more about it. If you're connected on my Facebook page, Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K-D-R Brown on Facebook, we'll be putting up the video a little bit later. Let's play clip number 21.
In this film, young Palestinians look back on the fun they had this season at UNRWA summer camp, where they learned values of the right of return, martyrdom, and jihad.
Yeah, you'll see it on the video, friends. And rather than just play clips on the air, I want you to actually see it. And when you do, when you see what's taught, oh, where did your parents come from? Jaffa. Haifa. Oh, do you want to go back there? Yes, we've heard this, we've heard that. And then principles, jihad, martyrdom for the cause. This is in a UN school. And remember, three times now, rockets were found in UN schools. How did they get there? Hamas artillery. How did the rockets get there? And in one particular case, UN just turned them back to local police or Hamas. Oh, here are your weapons of terror against Israel. But, Dean, I asked you before the break, and it's a difficult question. We care about Palestinians. Certainly, Jews are called to have a high concept of justice. Certainly, we have suffered at the hands of others around the world. We know what it is to be refugees. We know what it is to be hated and killed and rounded up. We are supposed to always treat the foreigner with compassion because we were foreigners, based on living in the land, part of the law of Moses. How do we fix something that's so deep?
Well, my thought is that there the whole concept of a two-state solution, the solution I think is the problem. My view is this, that when the UN broke up the land, they gave 1/6 of 1% to the Jewish people. The borders were 1/6 of 1% of the Middle East landmass, which means all the rest of the land.
Oh, you're not talking about quote, Palestine proper. You're talking about the surrounding Arab lands, which would be maybe 650 times
exactly.
The size. Okay.
Exactly. And when that was done, 60% of what Israel was, Israel, was uninhabitable arid desert. They couldn't be lived. So now, so what you have now is we're trying to do this two-state solution. And the whole idea is that we just keep giving away more land. But because the deal, because the real situation is not land, but the eradication of the Jews and no land for the Jews, wherever land is given, it is used as a staging point for attacking Israel. So Israel has to build the fences. They have to protect their people. Here's a perfect example. You've been to Israel several times. I've been to Israel three times. One thing that really caught my eye is when you are in an Israeli area going into an Arab area, into a Palestinian area, there's no checking. Nobody cares that you're going from an Israeli area into a Palestinian area because the Israelis aren't going in there to cause destruction and blow themselves up. But anywhere you go from a Palestinian area into an Israeli area, then your car is checked and you are checked and everything is checked.
Right. And of course, the thing that's so tragic is the great majority of the people that want to come through and have to go through checkpoints are not terrorists.
Right.
But here, let's look at it like this. If you knew that perhaps one out of every 100 people who came into your neighborhood was going to try to blow up children, would you say, that's a pretty decent percentage, or would you check everybody that comes through?
You have to check everybody. So it is, and like your film clips were showing, it's all in the leadership. And what we do is we pander to that leadership. We say that we need Netanyahu to sit down with Abbas because Abbas isn't Hamas. Now, he's the moderate, but Abbas will not recognize Israel as a state. Abbas will not admit that there was a Holocaust. He denies it. Abbas names schools and sports recreational areas and streets after terrorists
right.
who blew up innocent women and children. So that's the moderate we're dealing with. So my belief is that the reason that we'll never get to the bottom of this and why the checkpoints and the security that Israel has got to put in is because we're dealing with a government, and from the government level, raising up a whole generation of children who believe in the elimination of the Jewish people.
All right. So we agree on the depth of the problem. And again, the problem is that Israel has to live in constant warfare mentality. All young people, men and women, unless you're exempt as an ultra-religious Jew for now, you have to serve in the military, women for 2 years, men for 3 years. Men have to be in the reserves up until their mid-40s. So this is not an enviable situation. And then so you go into a mall. Woman's mm-hmm. pocketbook has to be checked in Israel. No one likes to live like that. And then the Palestinians, as they're known today, there is deprivation. Although, as I pointed out many times, the Arabs who stayed in Israel when the partition plan was accepted by Israel, so 47, 48, the 200,000 who stayed are now 1.5 million with more liberties and freedoms than any other Arabs and Muslims in the Middle East. And for the most part, they do not want to be under
exactly.
the leadership of Palestinian Authority or
exactly.
Hamas. So I look at it constantly as the Palestinian people as the victims of bad leadership. But let's ask this honestly. There are some Jews in the settlements in the so-called West Bank that have been very hateful of Palestinians and even engaged in some violence against them. There was the horror of the Israeli young people that kidnapped and murdered an Arab youth, a 16-year-old Palestinian boy, in retaliation for the kidnapping and murder of the three Israeli teenagers. There was Baruch Goldstein, who was a Jewish man, religious Jew, who went into a mosque and began shooting and killed dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens before he was killed. How does Israel as a nation look at the people that do things like that?
Well, from what I understood, is when the three Jewish boys were kidnapped by Hamas, the Hamas leadership applauded it. Even when they were denying doing
right, they still said it's a good thing.
They said it's a good thing. But yet when the Palestinian boy was killed, the Israeli government condemned it, immediately condemned it, and then immediately went after trying to find out who did this and bringing them to justice. So, I mean, we're dealing with people. You know, we're dealing with people and sinful man. I mean, the truth is the Jews are also very hostile to those who believe in Yeshua
right.
in Israel and do bad
religious
things
Jews
to them,
in particular.
Too. Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. So we are dealing with human beings. And I've constantly drawn attention to that, Israel's need for Jesus, the Messiah. But there is a certain hostility and hatred with which. Many Palestinians have been raised towards Israel, and then what they see around them in their mind confirms that if you grow up in Gaza today, you're going to look at these monstrous Israelis with their bombs. The good news is there is a younger generation that's trying to reach across the barrier. And when we come back, let's talk about the phenomenon of anti-Semitism and President Carter.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire. I've been sitting and talking with Dean Stein, a local fellow Jewish believer in Jesus, and he's written the book Freedom from Financial Funk. If you want to get the book, go to the website freedomfromfinancialfunk.com. Dean, I want to play a clip for you by Caroline Glick. Caroline is one of the leading journalists in Israel, has been on the forefront of politics and policies there for years. And she has proposed a one-state solution to the exclusion of Gaza. Let just that be its own place, basically. But said it has more positives than the two-state solution. And there's, as long as you have a Jewish majority, then you'll still have a Jewish nation. And among the settlers, that their birth rates are high enough and the Orthodox Jews, obviously, high enough that would counterbalance the high birth rates of the Palestinians and so on. And anyway, she makes an interesting point about anti-Semitism. So, Johnny, let's play clip number 19, where Caroline Glick is wondering why are the Jews always targeted?
What is that unifying force between Pharaoh and Ahmadinejad and Rouhani and, yes, the international left that is the handmaiden of these monsters of the Islamic world, without which they could never, ever march even one step forward?
All right. And her ultimate thoughts are the rejection of reason in terms of what's behind historic anti-Semitism. It's obviously more nuanced than that. I have my own views in terms of why this phenomenon of Jew hatred exists, which goes above and beyond anything that could be rationally expected or justified. Dean, do you have any theories or ideas on the existence of anti-Semitism?
Well, my belief is that prior to the coming of the Messiah, Haman and Pharaoh and all of these monsters existed as tools of the enemy to wipe out the Jewish race so the Messiah could not come.
Mm-hmm.
Since Messiah came, he made it very clear that he will not return until the Jewish people say, Baruch haba b'shem Adonai, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. So all the subsequent monsters that have come to wipe out the Jewish race are, again, just tools of the enemy to wipe out the Jewish race, so they're not there for the return of the Messiah. I think it all has to do with our Messiah, who we as a people have even rejected.
Yeah, and I'm with you on that, of course. And in fact, if the Jewish people can be wiped out, then God has proven to be a liar because it states that the Jews, the people of Israel, will always exist in this earth. Even despite our sins, we'll be disciplined, but we'll still be kept by God. So that's and when I look at anti-Semitism in terms of the intensity of it, the irrationality of it, how long standing it is, how widespread it is, to me, there's something supernatural behind it. So I see it very much the same way there. Earlier on, I mentioned that I've written an article called President Carter Aligns Himself with Terrorists. I spoke a lot about that the first hour. In fact, we'll be putting a YouTube video up where I take issue with former President Carter and former Irish President Mary Robinson in their article in Foreign Policy magazine. And in my mind, they really throw Israel under the bus and side with Hamas in so many ways. And many leaders are upset with President Carter for this proposal. Of course, he has a longstanding animus towards Israel in many ways. Dean, that being the case, and he's not the only Democrat who's espoused certain things, but he's been very outspoken. So in the name of justice and peace, to me, on the very wrong side of these issues, why are Jews so predominantly Democrats?
I can't speak for all Jews. What my understanding of it is this, is that as passionate as maybe you and I as Jews are about Israel, is the average Jew, especially in America, is not as passionate about Israel as we are. And they see Israel as this piece of land that keeps causing problems, keeps causing strifes, keeps bringing the Jews into the limelight in a negative way. And they try to distance themselves. So they're not so much concerned about, are they going to elect officials? And then there is a great amount of liberalism amongst the Jewish people. And of course, the Democrats are the Liberal Party. And so they align themselves more with their beliefs.
Right. And the liberalism is big. And the idea that if you lean towards the right, that that could be some, you know, religious right wing totalitarian regime, and Jews are skeptical of that. Although there is more and more defection of Jewish voters from the Democratic Party in recent days. And just looking at an article here for Hamas, the horror in Gaza is the strategy. It's on the JC.com. And it says that Hamas do not ignore the laws of war. They know them well and do everything they can to exploit Israel's adherence to them, with specific details, basically saying, as the Hamas Urban Combat Manual says, we will use Israel's attempt to not kill civilians. We will use that against them, and any civilian deaths we'll use against them. So that's why we agree that in the best interest of the Palestinians, it's not saying we want every Hamas member dead. We'd love to see them saved and repenting, but out of power, so that the Palestinians really can have hope for a better future.
And not fooling ourselves that Hamas is the bad wing of their government and that Fatah is the good wing of their government, because Fatah is not the good wing of their government. So it needs to truly be someone who does not have a political agenda to wipe out the Jews, but it truly has a political agenda to help their people.
Yeah, and of course, Mahmoud Abbas has been considered the moderate partner. His doctoral dissertation was basically a Holocaust denial or minimizing of the Holocaust. In certain ways, he's moderated. And look, if someone says, I want to sit across the table and talk with you, then you do your best to do it. If someone says, I want to sit across the table and talk with you, but I still want to kill you, then that is a little different. That's certainly what we're dealing with Hamas. Hey, Dean, we are out of time. The book, and we haven't focused on the book, but focused on Dean's testimony, then just comparing notes as Jewish believers in Jesus. The book, Freedom from Financial Funk, Dean Stein. But wait, before we're done, Dean, I have a note here from Scott Volk, who helped lead our Israel tour, and a friend of mine for many, many years, a friend of yours as well. But he said this: I've only broken 80 one time on the golf course, and it was when I golfed with Dean Stein. Therefore, everyone should buy his book. Come on, man. That was miniature golf. Must have been a miniature golf course. And friends, listen, as I just joke about that, the situation in the Middle East, tremendously serious. And then, at the same time, the slaughter of Christians. And they are doing everything in their power to get their voices heard. We'll be focusing on this more in future shows, because there's such a focus on Gaza and condemning Israel that their voices are hardly being heard, as they are suffering atrocities far greater than anything that's happening in Israel and in Gaza. So we do need to pray and stand together with them. Friends, partner with us. Go to my website, and you can show your solidarity with us as we stand on the front lines in Jewish outreach and educating the church about Israel. Go to askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. And probably the second slide that comes up will tell you how you can become a torchbearer, monthly supporter, and stand with us. My bottom line today It's very easy to find fault with political leaders, with government systems. They will all fall short. Let us pray for the coming in full of the kingdom and reign of God.